It is 18 hours, 30 minutes and 27 seconds East African time. Time for John Sibi Okumu on Wednesday. This being Wednesday, the 31st of August, 2022. Hamjambo na karibuni. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me again. Here I am, tanned, rested, and ready for another, hopefully, long stretch. The focus remains on ideas over individuals and on elucidation over confrontation. So it's quite in order for I don't know to be a right answer. We parted company in time for general elections on August the 9th, and it would be an understatement to say that since then, things have not gone quite according to plan. Our production formula remains pretty much the same. We have a mystery guest who will self-reveal towards the end of our conversation. He, for that is the pronoun to use in this instance, has a legal and film-making background. However, of the essence is that during the past elections, he contested a seat as a member of the County Assembly, or MCA, for a ward in Nairobi. We shall deviate from the norm and not have a specific question to random people, as my questioning will be of a more pointed nature. So, Mwanangu, for that is the appellation of the hour, yours is the sort of experience that is the stuff of best-selling memoirs. So imagine, if you would, that in yours the chapters are placed in three parts: inspiration, execution, and revelation. My first question under inspiration is, how did this MCA venture begin?
Well, Mwalimu, nimeshukuru. Sasa tumekuja kuongea hii mambo ya uchaguzi. How did this journey begin? I guess, where do all journeys begin? Perhaps it began with grandparents who were leaving India, 1890s, when the drought was going on. They kind of risked everything. They came on dhows. Some of them didn't end up where they're supposed to be, but they took a chance. So I guess, you know, taking a step in terms of trying to be the MCA for a particular ward in Nairobi took a long time in the making. I guess my journalistic background, I've been chronicling events in this country and across Africa for many, many years. I've filmed many, many elections. I've seen many, many things. I've filmed in the slums. So having seen this and chronicled this as a journalist, I decided, well, something needs to change, right? And let's be honest, the problems in this country, the problems with the systems, the inequalities really sort of mobilized me to try and make a change. So
what you have self-revealed, Mwanangu, is the fact that you are of South Asian origin, in speaking of dhows and the 1890s and a sort of exodus from the subcontinent. I would like to suggest that maybe to venture into the service tradition, as a South Asian was a bit of a lose-lose situation.
Well, in terms of the ward I've been in, and the South Asian has always been a winner in that ward. So essentially, I still think in the ward that you know, I stood for, the majority are South Asians.
Right. So, okay. So let's jumpstart. You expected the great majority of your quote-unquote own people to be able to vote for you, and we'll get there later. But is it too much of a terrible question to ask, why didn't you win? Because you lost.
Well, I think, you know, first time I learned a lot of lessons. I think you mentioned Mwalimu, the issues going on at the top of the country at the moment. You know, the country's in limbo. The Supreme Court is deliberating on issues, and you know, once again, we've gone into an election where the outcome is not clear. So I went in. I went in as an independent. I threw my hat in the ring, as Tracy Chapman once said, "If not now, then when?"
I remember that song. Yeah.
Okay, beautiful song. Yeah. You know, great artist.
Don't urge me to sing it, but yes, I do know it. Right. So, okay. So you.
Well, you can say it in Swahili. If not now, then when?
Kama sio sasa.
Yeah.
Nilini.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, I think I was a bit idealistic, a little bit naive. I think the party politics played, you know, a big role. And like I said, you know, if we're not sure what happened at, you know, the presidential election, are we sure that, you know, things were okay, you know, even at the ward that I contested?
Right. Well, we remember our part headings, not our chapter headings. We're still in the idea of getting the process going. Mwanangu, I'm interested in knowing, may I please ask you the Mickey Mouse questions, one of which being, one has to be rich in order to even consider the prospect of running for an election. Did you go in as a rich man? Did you fund this? And did you spend, dare I say, billions, millions of shillings to...
No, I'm pretty broke at the moment.
Right, okay.
I'm trying to get,
So where did you get the money from?
No, in fact, it was from well-wishers, family. And in fact, this is an interesting question because what we started even before I decided to stand, we decided to start just doing, cleaning projects within the Kijijis in the ward that I live in. So instead of just dishing out cash, which I didn't have much of, instead we started giving ladies, predominantly single mothers, you know, from the Kijijis, 300 or 400 shillings to help clean up, you know, the streets of Parklands. And tulianza hii vitendo even before we decided to stand on the ballot, right? So we'd already, you know, had a mission in terms of community service. And like I said, you know, win or lose, we're going to continue that.
Right. So I see shades of Barack Obama, wherever he was in Chicago, having a wonderful education, and then going back not to making millions as a lawyer, but to sort of doing community health projects and making a profile then. Were you alone in all this? Did you assemble a magnificent team? Or was your sort of lone ranger approach?
To an extent, it was a lone ranger approach. We just decided to start the cleaning program and get momentum. But, you know, along the way, we got a team of people who, mainly young people, who just kind of just saw the vision. So they became the primary kind of motivators and drivers of this project. So it's quite surprising on a journey like this, who will pop up and who will kind of turn up and say, look, I believe in what you're doing and I'm going to fuata you.
Okay, so I'm still into the organization. You've got followers. You've got people who believe in your dream. Are you paying them? I'm still interested in the idea of finances.
Well, so far, the finances came from well-wishers and family. Primarily, they were, you know, devoted to doing the cleaning exercises. I think going forward, since I'm not, you know, I'm not the MCA, but going forward, I'd like to formalize some of the projects so that they become self-sustaining projects. So it's not just people coming to clean, but maybe there's a recycling angle that can, you know, create employment within these areas. Because having visited the Kijijis that I've been in, most of the people just want, you know, decent living, decent jobs. And so if we can create these kind of projects that can we're not just giving handouts, we're giving a sustainable economy within these Kijijis that can actually work, then I think that's the longer term project. So win or lose, like I said, we're going to continue with that exercise And that's our vision.
I'd like to address this idea of a sort of culture and the whole idea of national values. And again, the pointed question is that the majority of us Kenyans don't budge unless somebody takes out 100, 200 bob note and gives it out. So the idea is that when you've got all these rallies, people are coming back, they want to be paid. This is what we read in the papers. So as an independent, if you're not going to be giving out the 200 bob notes, where do you expect to get the 200 votes?
Well, that's true. I mean, some of my people said, why don't we dish out, 100 bob notes along with the cards that we printed saying vote for Muradze. I said no, but because they said, this is how the election works. If you want 200 votes, you've got to dish out 200 shillings. So I guess maybe I was naive, but I deliberately decided not to do that.
But we have the precedent that was done in the elections before. We can name names because another activist in the name of Boniface Mwangi had gone for Starehe, didn't dish out the millions, and lost to the person who presumably may have. I'm being very careful with my syntax there. The people's choice on paper didn't win.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think this is the reality, and I think it goes back to sort of party politics, because if a party chooses someone, irrespective of their merits or their integrity as a leader, unfortunately, because of the power of the party, they come into power.
Right. Did you go into this? The very last question before we take a break. Did you go into this to prove a point? You could be in there. The people sort of want to run so that maybe one day a woman president will come. They just want to be a forerunner, sort of, but pessimistic.
I think I went in with a lot of optimism, again, a bit of naivety. Like I said, a lot of us spend time, debating these issues, talking about things, but we don't really do anything about it. And one of the unfortunate things, and I think, you're mentioning the South Asian background, unfortunately, we had a lot of people with a lot of a fight in them, integrity, who stood up, like the Makan Singhs and the Pio Gama Pintos. I'm still looking for, those kind of people who can push the South Asian vision. And I'm not saying the South Asian vision in terms of this is a community, a vision that can integrate with all the communities. It's not just about the South Asians. All these problems are integral, and we need to work on them together.
Right, a short break, if you would.
Yeah.
Wanangu, we continue. I know that one of the chapters was meant to be execution, but I'd like you to go back on your last sort of paragraph and to draw you more broadly on the possible impact of minorities in the politics of the nation. Again, the sort of given is that, our wonderful phrase, they should all lie low like envelopes and say nothing and hope that there is no disturbance of the infrastructure that sustains them. As long as South Asians are doing business, we're fine. As long as Europeans, Caucasians are running safari camps, we're doing fine. But don't, whatever you do, try to be a political leader.
Yeah, I remember you're saying, the phrase was, who are you supporting back in, the 1990s? And they used to say AGIP.
Yes.
Remember the petrol station?
Yes.
But it was AGIP, so it was any government in power.
Yes.
So I think to an extent, I'll state this openly, I think the South Asian community still are sort of sitting on the fence. possibly because of fear that their business interests will be, attacked or interfered with. But, my challenge is that if we want to have better representation and a better voice, then we can't really sit on the fence. And I think we've been sitting on the fence for too long, and we've been kind of backing both sides, like I said, any government in power, in order to secure our interests. But I think in the longer term, we need to make a better stand and not just think of it in such a selfish way.
I know for a fact that you were wooed by both camps, as it were. I think we've had a guest before who's talked about an organization bringing together South Asians, and you were visited by the front runners. You were visited by Kenya. You were visited by Azimio, Kenya Kwanza, and the leaders came to chat to you. As an independent, did you feel that you were leaning to a sort of ideological stance? Are we heading to the Conservatives versus Labour kind of notion, Democrats versus Republicans, high taxes, no taxes for the people? Is this all about ideology, or is it all about the transfer of money?
Well, I think standing as an independent, I do really think that, the party politics has kind of caused so much chaos in this country. It's led to tribalism, it's led to patriarchy, parochialism. So I think, and this continues to happen. I mean, the fact that we've got the kind of debacle going on at the Supreme Court as a result of this kind of party politics proves that it doesn't really work. So I think standing as an independent, fresh ideas, we had a really good manifesto. It was issues-based, not based on class, not based on where you're from or who you are. Very, very specific issues as to how to transform this particular ward in Nairobi. And our aim was to try and make a model ward, not just for Nairobi, but for Kenya and the rest of the world. Why not? We've got the people, we've got the capacity, we can do these things.
I would like now to, we'll return to that under part revelation and become philosophical, but let's go to the execution. So now it's August the 9th, it's election day. Again, the open-ended question, did things go well for you on the day? And were you of the impression that you were living through a free and fair exercise? Or did the red lights begin to come on even on the 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th, let alone the 31st?
As an independent in a ward in Nairobi, I had to mobilize 70 agents across all the streams. After all of that, so they had to be ferried to the particular voting stations. They had to be given food. And at the end of all of that, then we needed agents at the tallying center. So this was a big exercise just for a humble independent like me. But I'll be honest, when the tallying started for my constituent and my ward, it was very, very difficult to keep a track on what was going on.
Elaborate, if you would.
Okay, so we had...
Remember you're writing your memoirs. I'm sure to get the chapters going there, you need a few more words.
There were a lot of sleepless nights. The voting agents couldn't get home, after they'd overseen the tallying. So most of them slept at home, slept in two cars at home. And then we had to get back to, the tallying center in the morning. So it was total chaos, and we were trying to get some direction. And to be honest, we didn't know when the votes were going to be announced. We were told that we would be called as soon as a particular ward was announced.
You said it. Parklands High Ridge, that's who you are.
So literally, from our point of view, with our agents, it was almost impossible to know what was happening, because votes were coming from different wards in the constituencies at different times. 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. We didn't know what was happening behind the scenes. So from a logistical point of view, it was very difficult to know whether things were going, things were happening according to how they should.
You know, the question that comes to mind, and do forgive me, you're a guinea pig. You're an absolute guinea pig. I'm saying, it's not an insult, it's just a description. What I'm saying is, how can one go into an enterprise without knowing how it's going to be? This is the second, are we calling them digital elections, that we've had. We are being told that it's one of the most expensive, if not the second most expensive in the world. We're all reading the papers, much more expensive than the elections in India. Results took a shorter time, and it cost somebody, the taxpayer, the donors, the international community, 40 billion, either some demarcation of money, cost a lot of money. And you're saying to me, you didn't know what was going to happen next. Doesn't sound good in your memoirs, I'll tell you that for nothing.
Well, I think what's the hardest thing to sort of reconcile is that I ask for a bit of money here, there, and everywhere. At the moment, you know, you've got people starving in the country, and yet the amount of money that has been spent, not just in terms of an election exercise, 40 billion or whatever, that doesn't provide results, but what about the amount of money that all these politicians spent on trying to get to where they are? And if that money could have been spent, literally, there are people starving in Turkana, there are people living on, half a million a day. Maybe I'm being a bit idealistic, but unless we change this sort of paradigm where we're spending billions on an election that doesn't produce results, and then the politicians are spending billions in order to get to there, then I think, we have a serious problem with our system.
Well, I would agree, and maybe that's not within the scope of this particular conversation, because we're talking about lived experience. So if you'd be so kind, I'd like you to comment on the fact, for example, that people, because there's so much going on in bars, restaurants, marketplaces, the idea that people only voted, there was a one vote race for the president. But people like yourself, who are MCAs, people didn't care about you at all. So they cast one vote, but you were carting about six other bits of paper. So I'm asking, were you there to witness the voting process? Were you there looking at behavior patterns and perhaps taking a film? Because you're a filmmaker.
Yeah, you know, we had our agents. We did the interviews. I think you made a great point, which is that, and I've asked people across different constituencies, Uber drivers. I asked the Uber driver, and most of them don't actually know who the member of the county assembly is or was.
Right.
So it's very ironic because the member of the county assembly is the most directly elected and responsible leader in terms of your particular area. So
right.
the fact that people decided to vote for governor and president, but not to know who the person who's responsible for their safety and their Kijijis, responsible to make sure the lighting is taken care of, to make be responsible for the opportunities and development of their area. Most people didn't know who they were or who was standing, which is unfortunate, because this is the closest representative you have in terms of the hierarchy of government.
So, in sort of European politics, would you compare yourself to, in French, but the mayor of some sort of district in France? You're the mayor.
I guess it's in the UK they call it the municipal council.
Right.
So local government.
Local government. And therefore, yes, okay. Yeah. The other thing that I would like to ask you about, because it's pointed, did you feel that you were given the whole notion of publicity? In other words, that you had the wherewithal to, were you going, I don't know, I wasn't there, I'm sorry, I didn't watch your campaign. But could you be seen to be whizzing along in a truck with a megaphone telling people what's what? Were you intimidated by other What are the negatives? Were people sort of trying to beat you up, or you thought, you know, everything is wonderful?
No, I mean, a couple of times in one of the, I call them the Kijijis, and one of the times, you know, we were there trying to sort of mobilize and clean the streets, and then literally the car was attacked because I guess people wanted money and they thought, you know, kiongozi amefika, so, you know, there's money to be made or gained. So it was quite frightening. But, you know, the next time I went into that Kijiji, I just told people, look, I'm here to clean. And in fact, we had a couple of young children walking with us, and nobody gave us a hard time. But
so
I think
the through line, the entry point, Mwanangu, was that if you did something for the community, the worst possible problem they had at the time was a lack of cleanliness. And if you, but I'm hungry, I don't have a job. So, you know, the American expression, you can see where I'm going with this. Did you go for the point of least return?
I guess I went for something that I thought, you know, instead of dishing out money and trying to sort of win at all costs and the end justifies the means, I decided to do something more, you know, more grassroots. And it's interesting because, you know, this issue came up in another interview I did with another radio station. Which
oh my
is
gosh,
that,
another radio station?
Well not oh, this oh, one. I mean, it, oh, no, but you know, the issue came up about, you know, the kind of the you know, the so-called slums around the ward I'm in, and you know, how do we control, you know, the potential for crime, you know, emanating for this slum, and you know, my point was very clear, is that, you know, the people who live in this slum are the same people who look after our homes, who look after our children, who cook food, who serve us in restaurants. So we have a vested interest in them, because it's not just a one-way street. And I'm very categorical about that, you know, in terms of, I think the problem with Kenya is, and I think some of the themes that you've mentioned in the past, is how have we progressed since independence, and you know, how is successive government or governments delivered? I think the one overriding issue remains, Mwalimu, is that the inequality in our society is overwhelming, and I think you'll agree on that one.
I'm not allowed to say anything, but I think I sort of kind of we'll have a break. Mwanangu, tumerudi angani. I think that's, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe it's that. Or we'll have to self-correct. Onwards we go.
Twende kazi, tuko yes. Kali kali kama serikali. Tumetoka hapa lakini tutaenda bali.
You're a rapper. My goodness. I cannot match you.
I can't match you in your theatrical skills either, John.
Right. So here we go. Let's get serious again for a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sustain this idea of the experience that you had. And had we had, which I said we won't, a question to the people, that question would have been, is there any way you would have predicted that what we're living through now was going to happen on August the 9th?
You know, I've been covering, I first voted in 1997. I voted for, you know, I voted for Charity Ngilu because I thought, you know, the women should come in and this could be a new change. 2002... was the so-called New Dawn for Kenya. And then I covered, you know, I was right in the thick of things in 2007 when literally the shit hit the fan and we were right in the middle of everything. And I remember being there when...
Language, please. We'll delete that, but we heard it. Go on. When things got out of hand.
When things got out of hand, 2007... And we were right in the middle of everything. We were there at, we were there at KICC when, you know, the journalists were chucked out and everything. And to be honest, I mean, you know, how much has changed since then in terms of our electoral process? I don't think so. I mean, the last election that was kind of clean and fair was 2002. And here we are 20 years later facing doubt, uncertainty, and the same kind of problem. So I don't see that much has changed in terms of how we conducting our elections. So I'm not that surprised that the events, you know, that took place on August the 9th took place, because we haven't rectified what we should have done, you know, maybe, you know, 20, 15 years ago. We haven't made those changes.
I think this is the kind of program where I can draw you to philosophize a little. Okay. And I want to draw you on this whole notion of African solutions to African problems. The whole idea of the African Renaissance, a brand new dawn. Go and listen to Thabo Mbeki's speech on YouTube. That we are heading, all these things that are said about Africa, the continent of opportunity, the youngest continent, the continent with the greatest mineral wealth. But, dare I say, we are still imitating forms of governance which one could say are imported. They're an imposition on our culture. So you're saying, is it possible to say we can't deal with this? Therefore, where are our thinkers? And as somebody with a legal brain, if you say things aren't working properly, how might you suggest they would work otherwise? Sorry, that's a... but maybe we have to... Maybe we should switch on to the tome about the... my philosophy instead of my memoirs.
Well, okay. I mean, I think you I don't know if you like your reggae music, but I think, you know, I mean, you know, emancipate yourself from mental slavery.
None but ourselves can free us.
So I think we're still stuck in that mindset. Mm. You mentioned Thabo Mbeki. We did a lot of work with camera pics when Obasanjo and Thabo Mbeki were creating this sort of African Renaissance, and there was a lot of hope that we can solve our own problems. And so we did a lot of work, you know, on that. But I still think, we're still beholden and still trapped by, let's not call it colonial, but it just a kind of global kind of...
I'm being unfair on you. We're saying we've got election observers. Mm-hmm. We've got some, you know, what happens? You said 2022, 2017, 2009, election observers pitch up. Everybody has a little speechifying. What happened? Did we have a free and credible election? Oh, this has been marvelous. We've never seen anything like it. Bravo, Kenya. It was all transparent. We saw everything on the news. And then, and I'm not going to use your expression, but I feel very much like I do want to talk about things hitting the fan. It's all gone pear-shaped.
I mean, I've seen many things. I saw 2007 when the commissioner then Kivuitu, you know, ran out of the KICC hall, and I was filming, and I'm supposed to be an objective as a journalist, but when the moment he moved out of that hall, I did tell him, if you leave this hall, this counting hall, there's going to be chaos in this country. And literally within about 20 minutes, the journalists weren't allowed back into KICC. And we could hear gunshots, you know, from Kibera and further afield. The events on, you know, August the 9th, you know, that scene where people were attacking things, I mean, it was even more bizarre in a way than 2007. And the whole world was watching again. And this is how it, you know, this is how it went down. Not too good, right?
Yeah, but let's unpack what we're seeing on the TV screens, because we've established several things. Lots of money is being spent. Mm. Everything is hunky-dory in terms of the technology. So the people who are coming out looking really bad in all this are, and you've alluded to it to some extent, the leaders in whom we are placing our trust. Across as many divides as you wish to mention. Now, it wasn't the white man, it wasn't the yellow man, it wasn't the pink man who said people should be able to choose good leaders. So is this something we don't know? Are we leaving it to our great-great-grandchildren? Are we leaving it to a sort of French Revolution-style thing? Which way, Africa? Which way, Kenya?
I think we need to do things differently, definitely in terms of the electoral process. I think there should be better solutions. There's a vicious cycle which is discomforting, because what happens is that you get worse leaders, people have less interest, so the less people vote, so fewer people choose the leaders. So it's a big problem with the democratic process. I do think, in fact, I was talking to someone, all these election kits cost so much. Why don't, if we're talking about Pan-African solutions, have a Pan-African body that uses kits that are purchased at a reasonable price, and then the elections are conducted, properly across the board.
Yes.
Now, this could be a very practical solution if we want to try and solve this.
Right.
Get the African Union to agree on a committee that purchases kits that are reliable, and then they oversee the elections all over the continent. But maybe that's a pipe dream.
Or perhaps have an African Union that actually travels from place to place with different commissioners from 52 different countries. That sort of stems the idea of.
It would probably be more economical if you look at it. If we really thought about that. But maybe someone's benefiting from some tender somewhere. I don't know.
Right, so we're very much in the realm of part three of your memoirs. We've gotten into it, by force of conversation, which is the revelation bit. So, still, as we get into that, what have you learned from this experience? What has become clear to you? And let's load that again. Give yourself another 5 years. Would you continue cleaning the streets and saying, this is the Kijiji I want to enlighten, and hope that in 27, you're going to run again for MCA, and this time you're going to win? Because you said you're optimistic, so I'm riding off your energy.
I don't think I started this exercise, in order to get political office. The idea of standing as an MCA, was that if you want to try and change things, and if you're in that position, you're able to legislate, you're able to advocate, you're able to represent, the people. But I think the broader vision remains. Whether I'd stand in another 5 years, I'll leave that open. But I think continuing with the vision, I think, is definitely something I'm going to continue doing, because I don't think I was doing it just for getting the seat or getting the benefits of the seat. Firmly I believe that.
Yeah, but I wish you to become a philosopher, and I want you to go back to the people that we have, where we have this idea of constant movement of allegiances. So even now, as things stand, somebody is declared president-elect, and some constituency says, no, sorry, we were with you, Baba, one day, now we are with. Again, because we've had the same names and the same jigsaw puzzleists for the last 30 years.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. So, one day, this side is, fighting the other side. The next time they're in bed together.
Mm.
And so the circus kind of continues. So, how to break it...
Which leads on to the education, civic education. How, in a country where, oh gosh, what unfair questions to you as a, I'm sure you'll never come back again. If the educational system isn't raising people to the level of awareness of what the problems are, then surely we'll be always at that level where we go for a good rally. We put on a reggae tune, maybe the one we've just sung together, dance to it, and take off with 100 bob.
I mean, to be honest, registration was low in terms of what the IEBC wanted. I think they wanted 6 million new registered voters, and they got about 1.3 or 5 or 8. So obviously, the apathy, it remains, and that's the vicious cycle. The worse things get, the worse the election process gets, the less people want to get involved. And I noticed that in my ward, because definitely I was impressed, because the elderly people came out, but the youngsters, yeah, they just kind of decided to watch Netflix or do something else. So it was, you know, it's a big problem.
So would you like to comment on the role of the young? What was your experience of the ones that turned up to your particular barazas, or whatever the word might be?
I think this was across the board. So it was not just in our community. I think it was kind of noticeable that, you know, the youngsters didn't register and didn't turn up. So how do you transform that? How do you do that? And they're the bulk of the population. It is a big issue. And I don't think the IEBC really had the budget or were really going about, you know...
Didn't have the budget with 40 million...
Well, I don't know where they spent it, but there was very little sort of, you know, voter mobilization or education, you know, across the board. I remember people who wanted to register and change their... You know, people who I was encouraging to come and vote for me. And literally on the last 2-3 days of the, you know, the registration, we went to the places where they were, and there was no staff there. Let alone, you know, the idea of encouraging people to vote and explaining to them, you know, the importance of voting. There was very little of that. So in terms of civic education, that's what I saw on the ground. Yeah.
Okay, another question about the process is on the day, this idea of voter apathy, we've agreed you don't have that much money. Mm. Did you have a logistical count of the number of people that you thought would vote for you? We're getting into this whole idea of polling. I'm asking you the individual question from the micro to the macro, because part of this particular election was geared to this idea that we were goaded into believing that one particular party was in the lead because of the polls. You know, and in the white man's land, so to speak, you have the idea of exit polls. Mm-hmm. So right in the beginning, they're already beginning to predict that the way things are going, come 6 o'clock, Mwanangu will be the president. But it doesn't seem to happen here. We can't predict anything.
Yeah, it's very...
We've got all this fancy gadgetry to predict.
No, it's very difficult to predict. In fact, I think that, you know... The days leading up to the election were interesting because, you know, there was momentum. But then as soon as the sort of, when it came to the tallying and the idea of predicting or even finding out what was going on, it was almost impossible. I heard, you know, Johnson Sakaja spent 15 million on just putting his agents into place. Like I said, I had, you know, as a humble independent, I had to put 70 agents into place, and then when it came to the tallying, and it took about 9 days to get the actual result for my ward, where there was about 15,000 people, 18,000 people who voted. You know, again, there was about below 50. So, you know, one wonders, where's the transparency, you know, in this respect? Because it took about 9 days to get the official results, right?
It took about 9 days to get the official results, and we're going to have our final break. Capital FM. Mwanangu, it is 19 hours, 15 minutes and 32 seconds. We've got 15 to go. I'm sure we can make it. I would like you to philosophize. This is your philosophizing day. Electronic, digital versus manual. You went into the elections with a great trust in the idea of what technology could do to make the process more transparent. Do you feel disappointed now? Will you never pick up a smartphone again?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing. I think with all this technology that we couldn't get this, you know, this right, and we spent so much money. But I might still have a crack. I think, like Einstein said, you know, bad things happen when good people do nothing. So if we just sit around and we don't try and make a change, then nothing will change, right? So but I do agree. I mean, I think this whole technology, you know, has kind of failed, and the proof is in what's going on at the apex court as we sit here and speak.
As a contestant, as a candidate, I'm still going along this path of, did you know what you were letting yourself in for? In other words, did you say, if I run a good campaign, I've got enough backing and goodwill from people who are of my own kind, and all things being equal, I ought to succeed. What went wrong? Because you know how that you were quoting Bob Marley just now. What about he who fights and runs away lives to fight another day? When's the other day that you're going to live to fight, if you're so disappointed?
Well, I think you live it. You live and learn before your bridges burn. I think, you know, I faced a lot of challenges in my life. As a journalist, filming sort of conflicts, interviewing people, going into the slums, filming the post-election violence. But I think, like I said somewhere else, I think the biggest challenges is are in your head. It's the sort of mental challenge that, okay, fine, can I do this? And am I going to do it if I don't succeed the first time? You know, I think I'll keep trying, to be honest.
Right.
I will. I mean, I know the processes. I know the processes.
Right, yeah. I want you to lean more to the pronoun we. Mm-hmm. I know that you as an individual will continue to fight your struggles, but you keep on mentioning, for example, the post-election violence, and I'm sure you're referring to 2007. Mm. Now, one of the great sort of, you know, the sword of Damocles that hangs over us is that whatever happens, we want peace, as long as peace is returned. So for those, as a journalist, for those of us who are too young to remember, could you evoke what it was that happened in 2007 that you dread to see ever happening again? From a journalistic standpoint, because you were covering it.
Yeah, I think it was pretty horrific. You know, we were in Mathare, we're in Kibera. I mean, you see these things firsthand. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't think I have the guts to be a frontline journalist. A lot of the people who I worked with at CameraPix, you know, were, you know, had covered Somalia, had covered Rwanda, you know, all sorts of things. I don't think I personally have the appetite. But, you know, what we saw then was enough to sort of say that, you know, if things aren't done properly, then the consequences are pretty bad. So there was, I saw enough to realize that, you know, if things aren't done properly, then, you know, the consequences, you know, become very, very nasty. And we, you know, we were filming, we saw people who were shot. You know, we visited the hospitals. It wasn't pleasant, you know.
Would you go as far as to, because we're this is an ongoing sort of, we haven't written Act 3 and the denouement of our play. would you go as so far, because, you know, as a sage, let me take you the hat of sage. What is it, as we go through this process of self-examination, what must we avoid? Are you suggesting that maybe one side will just say, we'll chuck it all in, you rule for... Is there something worth fighting for that will lead the process forward with the terrible T word, the truth? Does the truth lie somewhere, or is it all an amorphous mess?
Well, I think the truth is amorphous. I think, you know, we all sort of strive for some sort of, you know, truth. I think if we're going to be honest about the situation in the country, I think we have to kind of do things differently, because otherwise we're, you know, bound to repeat the cycle. So to an extent, I think we might need to sort of remove the sort of, you know, mental shackles and the kind of democratic system we have. I know we changed the constitution in 2010, but I don't think this way of doing things and this kind of model, unless we change that fundamentally, I don't think things are going to change dramatically. I think we're going to repeat the same mistakes, you know, over each election cycle, unfortunately. So I think, you know, fundamental change in terms of, you know, does this democracy work, and should we be looking at more, let's say, African or internal solutions in terms of how we're going to solve our problems?
I'd like to draw you on the idea of you're coming from a minority. We've revealed that you're South Asian. Is there, again, do you reflect upon the larger role that minorities can play, with the suggestion that they're not doing enough given the means that they have? Because if, for example, your community is tasked with, that the understanding is that it runs the economic wheels of the country, it has the capacity to influence, the donors giving us billions of pounds sterling and dollars, whatever, the business community, do you think you could fund right as opposed to wrong?
I think now it's kind of a little bit clear that this mystery guests, you know, stood for Parklands, you know, High Ridge Ward. I know I let it out, naughty me, but anyway. So I think, you know, the irony there is that, yeah, you've got a wealth of resources, not just financial, but in terms of expertise. And yet this is not translating into, you know, proper management of the affairs. In fact, you know, we've got the hospitals, we've got the hotels in this area, we've got the businesses. This is not really translating into maintaining a proper environment and a proper ward. So this is the irony of the whole situation, that we've got the resources, we've got the finances, but we're not able, and we individually as the Asian communities, we're able to contribute to hospitals, but we're not able to kind of change the fabric and the environment in which we live.
But there are two South Asian communities, that if you would, because they're those who sort of would go back and say, my grand folks came here in 1890, such as you. Then they are, what is the term which we all know? They're the rockets who flew in last year. So the rockets have flown in. Is there a disconnect between people who feel a sense of patriotism and those who are here to, in a word, milk the country for all it's worth?
Well, I think everyone's looking for economic opportunity. So, you know, when my grandparents came, in 1890s or whenever, they were looking for opportunity. So I guess the rockets are also looking for opportunity. But it would be better if it was more cohesive and then we had a joint agenda. I mean, I like I said, if my parents, grandparents hadn't got here, who knows what would have happened. So I guess these people are also coming for opportunity. But I think it needs to be, planned. It needs to be more cohesive. And again, I don't think, as the Asian community, to be honest, we're really speaking as one voice. And that, I still say that, we go back to the days of the Mukun Singhs and the Pio Gama Pintos and all these people. But at the moment, I still don't think we're speaking with one voice. And that's my issue in terms of, the South Asian community. But I don't look at it as a South Asian community issue per se. I think, we have a lot more to contribute. And I take a much more integral view of community and the world, and that's why I think our destinies is tied in with the people who we live and work around with, who look after our homes, who take care of our children. We have to look at it from that point of view, and not one way.
I think the time has come for you. Yeah, we know a little bit about you, except your name. Your name, sir.
So my name is Murad Rayani, yes. A.K.A. Murade. That's the campaign name I used.
Suits you.
Well, it's interesting because Murade is a Kikuyu name, and it has two meanings. Murade is one who fires the arrow, and it's also one who kind of sees what's going on, further on. But I'm not sure. I did see what was going to happen in this election. A lawyer. Journalist, filmmaker, activist, enjoy music, enjoy the kind of banter, do a bit of writing.
Is that what you're calling our conversation? Banter? Okay.
Did I offend you? Sorry, this is intellectual discourse. Sorry.
Exactly.
Sorry. Sorry. I enjoy intellectual discourse.
Right. Okay. But we're not again at this. Do get me right. In this section of the program, we're not interested that much in self-revelation. I've got five brothers and sisters, whatever. We're talking about inspiration. So I would ask you, because our audience is a young audience, how did you get to where you're at, and how would you encourage other people to do the same? You started off as a lawyer, and then you're making films. Now, what if one of my biological sons wanted to be Murad Rayani? What did you do? What are the hoops through which you went?
I think, to an extent, okay, I had a relatively, privileged upbringing, and so, you know, not too wealthy. Went to a good school, managed to go to university. But I think, you know, the lessons in life is that, you know, always just push yourself, and if you want to learn from people who, you know, what you study. What you learn in the, you know, in the books and when you go to school isn't really like. I think look elsewhere. And my advice to the young people is push yourself, challenge yourself, look for mentors. I'm not advising the young people to follow my path in terms of, you know, standing for elected office. But, you know, my point is that, you know, I think it's important to challenge yourself and push your boundaries. Whatever age you are.
I'd like to ask you something about, because again, I'm getting into this, the South Asian community by definition is a very sort of structured, you go this way, become a lawyer, pharmacist, you were doing well, then you went into the creative arts. Did you follow your own heart? Did you rebel in some way? And would you encourage other young people to do the same or to do what mummy and daddy tell them to do?
Well, I don't think I did what mummy and daddy told me to do. So, I mean, my advice is I think, you know, as long as you kind of challenging yourself and pushing the boundaries and exploring the world, I think young people have a very good opportunity because when we were growing up, you know, we had one TV channel, we had very few textbooks. Now, you know, the use of the social media and technology means that, you know, the world is out there. You can learn, learn about filmmaking, you can learn about being a politician, you can learn how to be a musician, you can be like Yago and learn how to throw a javelin just from the YouTube. So, you know, the world is your oyster. I mean, you know, don't rest on your laurels and keep pushing and challenging yourself. And I think that's what I'm still doing. And I think that's why I went to, you know, I stood for the election, not necessarily to win, but just to challenge myself and say, okay, fine, how far can you go with an idea? And who can you inspire with that idea?
Brilliant. Thank you so very much for coming.
We
have to stop. We do continue to give us feedback, hopefully positive and reassuring, on the Twitter handle at Capital FM Kenya, or drop us a text or WhatsApp message on 0701-984-984. I've been talking to lawyer, filmmaker, activist, and of late electoral contestant, Murad Rayani. And you've been listening to John Sibiokumu on Wednesday. Thank you for doing that. Until next time.